Hello, good morning. Thank you for having us. We're very glad to be here. Today I will be presenting part of the research that we have been developing through the Be Air project. And our research deals with our local context. We are from Bosnia and Herzegovina, and we are dealing with soundscapes of war. The war of the Siege of Sarajevo. The Siege of Sarajevo took place from 1991 until 1995. And so instead of speaking so much today, I already presented some of our work during one of the winter schools, and I spoke about the methodology and how we went about developing the research framework. I thought that it would be nice that maybe I show you the documentary film which we have created for this project. It's about half an hour, so I hope it's not too long, because it kind of nicely summarizes one aspect of the research. There are other obviously parts to the research. That there's an academic paper being developed. We're also working with artists, and we have developed an electroacoustic composition as well as a sound piece. But for today, I think it would be enough to get the sense of what we have been working on just by, let's say, looking at the documentary, and maybe we can discuss it further. So for us, it was very important to understand how sound affected the daily experience during the siege, how sound was kind of a source of terror, but also it became a source of orientation in space, and eventually it became an agent of resistance, right? So the idea of sound changed as the siege progressed, and we will be able to see that through the documentary. And so we had an exhibition at the Historical Museum very recently, and some of the partners be able to see it. So I apologize to those who have already seen the documentary. I hope it's okay that we watch it once again.
I had just one question. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to interview cultural actors like artists, architects, curators, and not other people?
Well, for us, it was very important that the narration would come out, that the people were able to articulate themselves, and that they were aware of their environment, that you know that they were participating in. And so we were very careful in terms of the selection. We were limited how many people we could interview, because of the equipment, time, and so forth. And so we wanted to have it transgenerational. Some of these people were kids during the war. Some of them were adults. You saw that then. It was also important that they were living in different parts of the city, so that we kind of got this landscape, the entirety of the landscape. And then we had the foreign journalists, which bring a different perspective. And so we reached out to a large number of people. There was an open call to who wanted to participate. And so it happens that these artists, curators, film directors, the people who were participating in the cultural resistance, they were the most willing to share their stories. They were the most, the ones who came out. And you know, it's difficult to ask somebody who's not willing or who's not ready to talk about it yet. The process of interviewing itself was very, I would have to say, cathartic for me, at least, because we were also not sure how people would, how far or how much they would be able to speak about these memories. Some of them hadn't spoken about the wars since the war. And so we had to be very careful in the interviewing process, starting with some very general questions, you know, and kind of leading towards more specific things, and seeing in some cases we would only go so far, because you had to gauge the reaction, or you had to gauge the other side. The very last speaker that you heard, his brother was obviously killed during the war, and for the first time ever, he shared the entirety of the experience, and this is only one part. It was a very, very difficult day filming. The entire crew was pretty much in tears. We had to take a break to, but then it's an ethical question: how much of their stories to use, and what is appropriate. And so we decided to tell, with his permission, we decided to keep some of it, but we didn't go into some of the gruesome details in some of the other, let's say, stories. And so there's always this balancing line when using witnessing, right? And also keeping the witnesses in the loop. A lot of the participants thanked us because it was kind of a therapeutic moment, if I can say, if I can use this term, therapeutic, to speak and to get these memories out. Even though they might have been reluctant, it was a moment of facing them or bringing them up again and in a different context. And so in the end, we received a lot of positive feedback from them. I hope that, yes.
I did want to ask something that is related to your question as well. And I also kind of asked it in the context when you showed it in Mass Festival and the Museum of History of Bosnia and Herzegovina, whether the people from the museum would consider to kind of incorporate that to their collection, to their... I'm asking this because I also find that the stories that you've collected and the people speaking are very articulate and stuff like that, but this could be very easily be an elicitation of memory for other visitors. So a way to also trigger other people to remember and add to the archive of those narratives. So the question is whether they're thinking of incorporating it somehow, because it's a great work.
Thank you, Jorgas. Yes, they have asked us. They have asked us that this becomes part of the permanent collection, which is quite an honor for us. As you know, there are two other pieces that go along, so we have to figure out how to combine it into permanent position. But yes, it goes back to this idea of also what Helmi was saying, how collective memory ties into the personal. There are some things that are shared, there are some things that are very personal, but it resonated very much so with the general public. Even the exhibition was supposed to be put down on the 10th of May, and it's still going on in Sarajevo today because there was such resonance with the local population, so that there was a request that it stays on longer. And so we hope that we have made an impact. We also hope that we have, let's say, justified, or that the witnesses, you know, that there's some sort of personal satisfaction that their stories are heard. But their stories are very much a story of many people who have gone through the war. And we also wanted to show that the war sounds were not just the ballistic sounds, the terrifying sounds, right? There are other elements. There are the sounds, you know, it became very useful and tactful to use sound as a way of moving through this space. It became a part of survival tactics. And then we also wanted to show this notion of resistance, you know, owning it, becoming an agency of fighting back in a positive way.
Yes, thank you. I was very interested in maybe, I was wondering also if you have the people you interviewed made some differences between the voluntary sounds and involuntary sounds. So non-voluntary, meaning that some of the sounds that are described are intentional, and some others are not. And I was also wondering, because of some testimony I already heard about the siege, if there was in your in the words you collected, people mentioned sounds that were produced intentionally by enemies also.
So if I understand the question correctly, you're asking about the ballistic sounds.
Only ballistics, also if there was some way of hearing words intended by people making the siege.
If there were some, can you repeat?
Some words, some sentences, some threatening or some way of reaching people by sound also.
Right.
Not only by ballistics.
I don't have maybe here the map of the siege. So the city was surrounded. The city sits in a valley, and it was surrounded on top by this line of military, but it was not close enough to hear people speaking. Right, there was this communication. If there's something going on, the sniper would be there and communicating through the rhythm, right? If there are many people gathering, there would be certain amount of, more amount of explosions or bombs targeted at that certain place. And also, like, you saw the silence. The silence was also used as a weapon in some ways, because the psychological moment of silence is sometimes worse. And they were saying you get used to certain rhythms and you go along with the rhythms. But when it's silence, there's this notion of uncertainty, and maybe something much worse is coming up because it's silence. And so that was also very much an intentional tool of you know, of weaponizing the soundscape through silence. Some people say it was very relaxing, but most of them said that silence became an easy element or not something that was...
And so maybe it's too early for that, but you didn't have the opportunity to collect people using sounds as weapons from the other side also.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Did you have this...
You mean like torture in that sense?
No. I mean, people were... attacking people and who maybe testified of using sound themselves as weapons, as you said, silence or sounds.
Mm-hmm. We didn't interview the people, the perpetrators.
I understand.
We interviewed the people who survived it. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you for the presentation. It's not a question, it's more like a comment. I found it very interesting also. When some people were trying to remember sounds of everyday life in a city which is not an everyday city, and it really, how can I say, marked more my emotions. For example, when they speak about electricity and the hours that in their apartment or the electrical, which is something that in our everyday life when we haven't really lived a situation of a war situation, it makes us realize the change of the everyday life in situations like this more, because just to realize that you have only one hour of an ordinary life, you can feel it more. For people that haven't really heard the real war sounds of guns, and that's what I'm saying, that I found it very interesting also when they go into their ordinary lives while the war was going on.
Thank you.
Well, I have to speak. I come from Serbia. I have to speak. I'm not a perpetrator. And I'm not the one of the Serbs who were around the city. On the contrary, I was always an anti-war activist. And I want to say from that perspective that I think it's very important that you have done this as artists and researchers, and also talking with people from the cultural field. I must agree most strongly with one of the collocutors in the interview. The siege of Sarajevo and what was happening during long years was actually the war against urbanity, against culture, against citizenship, for the right-wing, nationalist, and everything which we see now wider and wider in whole Europe. And this is why, of course, we will try to support and disseminate your movie as much as we can. And I'm very glad that you are from the younger generation revisiting this theme and not letting it drop into oblivion, because it can happen any day again. And also, actually, my question would be similar to what Yorgos was asking, because I think it should be a part of the museum collection. Mm-hmm. And also, as recognized spontaneously, it can become a strong tool of therapy in a way, and community building. So were you thinking about some activities in the sequence of the exhibition itself?
Thank you. Thank you, Sunčica. And thank you for your comments and your kind words. And it's great. And also thank you for coming to Sarajevo and being there with us. The historical museum is very, very interested, and they were really excited about this exhibition. They have lots of ideas even before we approached them. And so during the summer, they were going to work with them and see if we can organize some workshops for the wider community. But we are also working with a psychologist and a musical therapist. And so this has to be crafted in a very precise way. This kind of goes beyond my expertise. I'm an architect by trade, right? So it was really important to include these other professionals within the project. We have already started working with those surveys and feedback to see how people reacted to the exhibition and to see if, you know, if this was emotionally maybe a bit much, or if, you know, just to get that aspect. And so once the exhibition is over, we have to evaluate the surveys first and to see the impact it has had so far. And I think after that, we can sit down and create kind of a very systematic or a very sensible approach to this. I don't think I'm the one capable of doing this alone, obviously. So we will heavily rely on the music therapist and on the psychologist to help us with these next steps, like you said, with community involvement workshops at the historical museum, and then also to see if we can maybe rearrange something about the exhibition based on the feedback. Maybe there's something that could have been done differently or somehow, you know. So this was kind of the first step of the project. Thank you for your comments. Yes. Okay, so I think it's important. Sorry to.
No, please.
So the documentary itself is basically the summary of the collective experience that we have seen through these different witnesses. And then there is this electroacoustic composition, which was done by an artist. His name is Haris Sahacic. And he has composed basically a symphony of sounds of the siege based on the accounts. So he has reconstructed these sounds that the people have spoken about. And this is just a small sample that you see in the documentary. We have 30 hours of witnessing. And he has gone through all of those and arranged them it sounds, but in a symphonic, I'm not a musician, so I cannot speak. He was very articulate about the rhythm, about the acts, about the way he organized these sounds. And so it's experienced in a space with 6 sound monitors. So you have to sit down and listen to them in this manner. And so we're creating a mono version, which of course will not be as powerful as his full version, but I think you will be able to get a sense of what he wanted to say. So the idea was to reconstruct the sounds in a different sequence and in a different context, and so that the people who have gone through it are able to reface them now in a safe environment. And it's kind of this next step. The first is witnessing, the second is facing them again, and also for the younger generations who haven't been there, to at least give them a sense of what it might have been like. It's only 4 minutes, 4.5 minutes. It's not something extraordinarily long. And then after that, we have a music piece that deals with music as therapy, is kind of a decompression moment, so that otherwise it would be very intense to sit through these continuous sounds of war. And so these two pieces of Symphony of the Siege and Peace, it's called Peace, they work together and all together. It's maybe 10 minutes. But there's this really moment of decompressing, listening to sounds of this musical therapy. Again, there's this whole theory behind how music therapy works, but they work very much together in terms of the composition. It goes from the large to the small to the personal, and then the same with the other piece. And so that will also be online. It's really much better to experience it in a gallery, obviously, but I think you will get at least a sense of what that would have been. So these three pieces really work together as a whole. Thank you.